From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. The streaming service Quibi is shutting down just 6 months after it launched. This week, we bring you a mega banter on its demise, and then we revisit our April interview with Quibi founder Jeffrey Katzenberg. An eternal optimist, Katzenberg has rolled the dice his whole life.
Literally 50 years ago, I was on a path as a very young man to be in the casino business, and look where it landed. Always gambling.
Katzenberg gets into why he went ahead with the launch during the pandemic and why he was so sure at the time that, as he put it, it's not about what we do in the first 6 months. But first on the news banter, well, Quibi. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague and banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So let's start out by listening to Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Somewhere between the idea being less than perfect, which we own, and the environment we found ourselves in is where the fail has come. How much is, you know, what each of those are in that equation, I'm not sure any of us are ever going to know, but it didn't work.
So that is Jeffrey Katzenberg, founder of Quibi, and he is talking on CNBC about the fact that Quibi is shutting down what was supposed to be a premium streaming service. You pay between $5 and $8 a month to watch a range of short videos, 5 to 10 minutes. And Jeffrey Katzenberg is saying publicly and has said to his staff internally, you know, we just don't know. We don't know why this didn't work. Maybe it was a pandemic, you know, maybe not. Maybe it was a concept. And I can hear the chorus around Hollywood. I don't even have to virtually hear it. People are texting me. They think they know. And they think the problem was that Quibi was a concept fail from the beginning. And let me say, Jeffrey Katzenberg has had a lot of experience and success. He was chairman of the Disney Film and TV Studio. He started DreamWorks with David Geffen and Steven Spielberg. He has done a lot of things. But as an older guy, the idea that he and Meg Whitman, who isn't necessarily a big fan of entertainment, as she herself admitted, that they were going to figure out what millennials on the go want to watch, many people didn't believe that for a second.
No, and you know, while the pandemic certainly didn't help, I mean, the whole model for this was premised on people watching on the subway and in the doctor's office and places that people just don't go now. Mm-hmm. The ultimate idea here, which was to create a market where it turns out there isn't one, was flawed. And this is, you know, a fundamental problem. And if you're going to raise the kind of money they raised, which is $1.75 billion, you've kind of got to prove out your market first. And they didn't do that. And there's a whole host of reasons. And, you know, we could get into the details of how they had some arrogance about saying they were reinventing things. They had some technology that ultimately became subject of a patent infringement lawsuit. They, you know, built out this big headquarters in Hollywood and did all of these very advantageous deals for talent, which meant that they really didn't own any of the content, which is now going to be a problem trying to sell off this stuff. There are a number of flaws to this, but ultimately the big picture was the market doesn't exist for this.
Yeah, you know, just not scientific, but talking to my 30-ish nephew was like, what is it? Why would I need it? I'm not paying for it. So that was the long and short of it. And a lot of people had never even heard of it. When I talked to a class at Notre Dame University, they were like, the kids were skeptical. So I don't think that was a mystery to a lot of people. Now, a lot of agents, certain agents were very protective of Quibi because, of course, they were cashing the check. And a lot of talent, I think, was also happy to cash a check. And I'm not sure Quibi got the stuff. You know, they might have gotten some stuff from the bottom drawer like that hadn't sold somewhere else. I know, let's repurpose it and make it into a Quibi thing.
Well, and don't forget, all of the studios were quote unquote investors in Quibi, which is part of why it had such credibility in the first place. But as we know, many of these investments that the studios made were essentially agreements to buy content. So yes, if the Walt Disney Company was an investor in Quibi, that's a great thing that Jeffrey could tout around town. But it really meant that that Quibi had agreed to buy a certain amount of content from Walt Disney, and that's what the investment was. So it wasn't that big of an outlay from these companies.
Definitely not. Now, in terms of you mentioned the selling off, Quibi had licensed this stuff. One of the lures of Quibi was supposed to be, we will greenlight your thing, you make it, and then it will revert back to you after 7 years. There's an exception for the certain things that can be stitched together. You know, certain filmmakers were making things in increments and ultimately could be put together and be like a movie, in which case that goes back to the creator in 2 years. So Jeffrey Katzenberg and Meg Whitman have been talking about, we're going to sell this content and try to raise more money, because one of the reasons they say they're shutting down is they concluded it wasn't working and they want to return money to their investors. The thing is, you're not, you know, what are you selling? You're selling Quibi sized stuff to, they tried to sell the whole library and that was a fail. It shows the lack of interest. And if it's anything that's a thing, you know, then ultimately it reverts back to a filmmaker and they can put it together after 2 years. So I'm not sure how much money they can squeeze out of that so-called sale. It just feels to me like they're trying to just, you know, do the best they can with what they got.
No, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some of these projects migrate over to other streaming services, because while, you know, Jeffrey may not get that much money back, if there's a fire sale on some shows that have name talent attached to them, you know, I think other streamers are going to take a look. I mean, as an example, I'll cite the one piece of content that I watched start to finish on Quibi, which was the Donald Sterling documentary about the owner of the Clippers. I was very interested in that, and I watched it on Quibi, and I was very frustrated to have to wait another day for another increment of it. I would have much rather watch it in its entirety. But if I'm a streaming service like ESPN Plus or even Netflix or something that's looking for sports documentaries, I might call up Quibi and say, hey, how much for the Donald Sterling doc? And if you can put together a deal that makes Jeffrey happy and makes the filmmakers happy, you know, some of this stuff would be good on other services. And we've seen examples where companies that have cast off their shows, like look at Cobra Kai, which was a YouTube production. And now that wasn't short form, but it was a YouTube production, didn't do much on YouTube, and then migrated over to Netflix this year. And it's become one of their top hits of the quarter. So there is a market for this stuff if it's good.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the phrase you used at the beginning of what you just said, which was fire sale. So I'm not saying they're not going to sell anything to anybody. I'm just saying this isn't going to make all the investors say, oh, thank God we're getting our money back. And, you know, you bring up another point, which is that if Quibi were to succeed in any world, you would have needed some content to break through. Now, you watched one thing in its entirety. I watched nothing in its... I sampled before we interviewed Jeffrey Katzenberg for the show. And this was stuff they picked for me to look at. And it was an array. It was diverse. You know, they had all kinds of... They had a game show. They had this, that, a drama with Liam Neeson or whatever. But the truth is, you know, I just didn't feel compelled to complete any of it. And some of it I was felt compelled to bail out very quickly. So you don't get there. It's not possible to spring into existence with no library and spend a ton of money on content, forgetting the concept. That is not possible as far as I know. And I will reiterate a point that people make over and over again. No one has started a studio from scratch in many, many decades. And Jeffrey Katzenberg should know that because he tried it with DreamWorks and he couldn't do it.
And the only one who has done it successfully is Netflix, which is producing a fire hose of content that Quibi was trying to compete with. And it's just so difficult to compete in the content ecosystem right now.
Yeah, I mean, Disney is trying to get in and doing pretty well in terms of subscribers, but they have generations of content. Same for HBO Max and same for Peacock. So, yeah, I mean, they were trying to be different, but it didn't work. Now, Netflix, of course, just somewhat disappointed the world, saying, well, we didn't get as many subscribers in the most recent quarter as we had thought. I don't think anybody is selling their stock suddenly by any means. I always think about Netflix running and running and running. And I always wonder, is there an end to that runway in terms of, you know, hitting a wall with subscribers?
There may be. And that's the big question. You know, 200 million is within sight and people think they're going to get there this year. But the competition is much tougher now. And Netflix knows this. They've been warning about this for years, that people were going to get their act together and it was going to become an all-out brawl for those subscribers. And, you know, we'll see. I think the others are coming on strong. The HBO Max numbers this past week weren't great, but they were a big plus over the first quarter that HBO Max launched. And once they get people to realize that they can switch over from HBO to the HBO Max at no additional cost, and they do deals with Amazon and with Roku to get access to those subscribers, I think they're going to be a formidable competitor.
Yeah, I think they're priced too high, and that's going to have to change. That's my opinion, but we'll see. I mean, if you're already paying for HBO, fine, but if you're taking it on as a new thing, not so fine. Let me just quickly, while we're in the HBO neighborhood, mention that Channing Dungey has now moved from Netflix to run Warner Television. Peter Roth retiring after a very, very long time running a place that generated hits like Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men. This is a huge change, though. Peter Roth, you know, older white man. You couldn't come up with the type more. I think there was a lot of restiveness. Susan Rovner went to NBC Universal to a top content job there because Peter Roth wouldn't get out of the way. And what we are seeing is Jason Kyler now running Warner Media. This is a rolling reorg and a generational shift. And I think we're going to see more of it.
Yeah, I mean, the focus is 100% on streaming now. And if you look at the Warner Brothers television that Peter Roth ran, a lot of people were saying it was sort of stuck in the 90s, where he had an orientation around generating these big, broad broadcast hits like Two and a Half Men or Big Bang Theory, which would generate billions of dollars in downstream revenue from syndication around the world. But that's not the world we're living in now. Warner Media, in order to be competitive, has to reorient Warner Brothers Television to creating hits for the streaming era and specifically for HBO Max. And that is going to be Channing Dungey's first and most important job, producing hits for the streaming service and other channels that are doing a very different type of television than what was successful in the broadcast TV era.
Yeah, she is going to be tasked with finding broad hits that will differentiate HBO Max from HBO and be popular and attract eyeballs and break through that clutter that we talked about as, you know, having been one of the many problems facing Quibi. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. Coming up after a short break, we revisit our interview with Jeffrey Katzenberg from April, when things were already looking wobbly. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. As Matt and I just discussed, Quibi is shutting down a mere 6 months after it launched. Former Disney and DreamWorks executive Jeffrey Katzenberg and former eBay CEO Meg Whitman had raised $1.75 billion to spend on a simple pitch: short content designed to be watched on your phone. Quibi, meaning Quick Bites, marketed itself toward on-the-go millennials used to watching videos while commuting or standing in line. Quibi brought in expensive, big-name talent like Guillermo del Toro, Chance the Rapper, and Chrissy Teigen.
This is Chrissy's Court.
Priced at $5 to $8 a month, Quibi struggled to break through. A month after its launch, Quibi's downloads were paltry. It ranked below the language learning app Duolingo on the Apple App Store. In July, Quibi lost 90% of its paid subscribers after the three-month free trial ended. Last month, news broke that Katzenberg and Whitman were looking for a buyer. Apple, Warner Media, Facebook reportedly all passed. Quibi also struck out on selling the rights to its programming in one big deal. I spoke to Katzenberg in April, just 2 days after Quibi launched. I've known him since I was covering Disney's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which looked like it would be a big failure for him, but wasn't.
I'm sure you remember, Kim, we had one of the worst disastrous sneak previews of a movie I think I've ever been to. So, you know, which literally two-thirds of the theater got up and walked out about 20 minutes after the movie started. So, but, you know, it was one of those testing moments. You know, I didn't lose my optimism for what they were doing and ultimately delivered arguably one of the greatest movies, you know, innovative,
classic.
And innovative, unique. And so, I don't know. Yes, I have fond memories, but as you know, Kim, it's always very blurry for me on the details.
Yeah, you don't look back. I know, yeah. Jeffrey.
I've always been so much more excited and interested about what's in front of me. You know, in the metaphor of life, I'm driving in a car and I'm doing probably close to 100 miles an hour, and I have no rear view mirror and no side mirrors. So I can only see in front of me.
And he does that actually in his car, folks. I have seen this, so he's not even kidding.
Yes, I actually do drive 100 miles an hour, and I don't look in the mirror. So literally and metaphorically.
A thing that I know about you, because I wrote a book that you were on the cover of, is that in your youth, you worked for John Lindsay as the mayor, and there was a notion among his political allies to start gambling clubs in New York. And you were being trained to be a host of the club. And actually, you were taught to count cards and were sent to gamble in casinos by some interesting New York characters. I don't know, you got off of card counting, but you at one point, I think, were banned in various casinos because of your skills in this respect.
That is correct. I will not argue the slight skew of the story, but you're in the ballpark enough that we can leave it at that and just say, yes, literally, 50 years ago, I was on a path as a very young man to be in the casino business, and look where it landed me. Always gambling, never stopped gambling. Different stakes.
And so then you, of course, went on. You've had this amazing career. You were obviously at Paramount and from there to Disney. I mean, whole books have been written about this, including one by me, and then DreamWorks, where you made amazing films. I think Shrek is my big recommend for parents during the pandemic.
Well, remember, the most important thing there is ogres are like onions. They have layers.
So this brings us to Quibi. I'll get to Quibi.
Yes, in the words of Donkey, are we there yet?
Slow but sure, me. All right. So obviously you were not trying to launch Quibi in the midst of a completely unforeseeable disaster like this. You know, there have been people saying, why now? Why didn't you wait?
Let me try and frame it for you. So 9 months ago, we picked April 6th for a very specific set of reasons in terms of just timings of other events and things that were going on, NCAA basketball, NBA playoffs, the Academy Awards, Super Bowl. All of these things were things that we looked at and landed on that April 6th date.
I mean, you didn't want too much noise around it, is what you're saying. You wanted a little space for it.
We wanted to be in the place where we would be the only noise. A month ago, it was clear that our world as we know it was certainly going to be upended. And Meg Whitman, my partner, we actually sat down and we spent a couple of hours on a whiteboard looking at the pros and cons of staying the course. And sort of thought about, well, this was designed from the outset to be, we get up every day, we leave our home, we take a television set with us, our phone. And in the course of our day, we have all these in-between times, commuting, waiting online for Starbucks, et cetera. Now, suddenly, we actually are not leaving our homes. We're sheltered in place. Would that use case hold up? And our assessment was it actually would hold up very well. We all will and are having many, many in-between moments. I would make the argument maybe even more in-between moments. They're different.
Right. Well, you didn't want noise around the launch, though. And of course, this is the loudest damn thing that we've had in our lifetimes, I think. And it doesn't end. You know what I mean?
Yes, but so is Quibi. This is not a movie or a TV show that has an air date, comes out, and in a matter of days, succeeds or fails. It's a subscription platform. We are going to be measured in months and years, not in days and weeks.
Right.
I have never, ever been in a position where I had great content and it failed, ever. Maybe it didn't work the first day or the first week, but you've seen this for all your decades of reporting, Kim. When you have something that's really good, it really works.
Yeah, I would sort of say, I immediately went in my mind to DreamWorks, which ultimately, you know, it started out strong, but it had no library, which has been, you know, that's been the thing that is so true in Hollywood forever. If you no library, makes it hard to sustain. But you're, in a way, trying to launch a studio with no library.
Yes, but not actually not. That's not the way. And I don't want to be the least bit defensive about it, but in the end, Stephen and David and I ended up creating about $7 or $8 billion worth of value for investors over the course of those 20 years. Did we fulfill the greatest vision and dream of what we painted a picture for? You know, we did not, but it was a success and in varying degrees, but in the end it worked, and so will Quibi. And so it's not about how we do in these first 3 months or 5 months or even 6 months.
Even before the noise was really as noisy as it became, we had done some survey showing low awareness at the Hollywood Reporter. How do you combat the question of awareness?
All I can say to you is we opened 2 days ago. We actually had a very, 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 very healthy downloads, and then more importantly, conversion into trials. The only thing that matters to Quibi in the end is net paid subscribers.
You know, you lead me to the bigger question that has been in my mind, which is we've seen all of the media, you know, the ones who can jump into the streaming game, right? But I have wondered, is there proof of concept for any of this, given the way the wager is being made by these companies, such huge wagers? And, you know, Netflix came into the world. There were no competitors. They had plenty of time. They had ridiculous out of the gate success with House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. And as far as we know, they don't really make money. So what I'm wondering is this sort of a thing where everybody's gone completely mad and we don't know that any of it works, really?
Well, it does work. So, you know, Netflix continues to do an amazing job and has credible content.
But they are burning money, as we know. They throw billions at content, and we don't really pays off in the end, right?
Listen, I don't know enough about their finances to be an expert on it, except I look at it as somebody who is a subscriber, and, you know, I couldn't wait to see Tiger King, and I'm now halfway into season 3 of Ozark, and, you know, they just keep doing it. So now I go to Disney Plus, and once again, just say they have proven themselves to be in a category of one. And these things are, it's not a zero-sum game. It's not like one guy wins and another guy loses or gal in this. It's not working that way. It's easy to throw stones at these things and to be skeptical and cynical. I'm not. And by the way, they've thrown all the stones at me right now as we're here. Like, there are more people that are writing my doom in this very moment that we're having this conversation. And it's not that I'm ignoring the risk and the challenges of what we're doing or that Meg is. We are seasoned business executives. She and I together got 80 years at this. We are focused on building a business that is sustainable and profitable, and ultimately, you know, we believe is going to be successful.
So you're trying to do a ton of programming to appeal to, you want younger people, but you're not, you're going across.
We're quite targeted though, Kim. Yes, it's an 18 to 44 year old demographic there. It's a millennial audience, but the bullseye for us is 25 to 35 years old. And that is where the vast majority of our programming is aimed.
You have drama, you have news, you have cooking, you have, you know, very, very eclectic mix of programming. Now, as you know, I'm going to ask about this. Some of the reviews have been harsh. How does the optimistic Jeffrey Katzenberg process those reviews?
Well, the content is so eclectic, and it is at the same time quite targeted. And I guess I would rhetorically say to you, of the reviews that you are reading, how many of them are written by 25 to 35 year old millennials?
I don't even know.
I'm pretty confident it's low single digits.
Okay.
So, you know, listen, I've always talked about the two things that matter most in Hollywood, the Academy Award and the Bank of America Award. Like, those are the two things that
I know which one you want more.
No, I want them both. Everybody wants them both. You know, when I moved here from New York, and I remember it as though it was yesterday. You know the hill on La Cienega when you drive up to Sunset, how steep that hill is?
That's a steep hill.
Okay. Well, in the early 70s, when you drove a car up there, which I drove my Mustang up there, if you didn't keep your foot on the brake and the gas at the same time, you'd roll back into somebody else, right?
Right.
But I was stopped right at the top of the hill, and I looked up, and there were two billboards. One billboard on the right-hand side had an Oscar campaign, you know, for your consideration billboard, right? On the other was a billboard for beachfront property in Malibu. And I went, okay, there it is. There's the answer. This is the meaning of life here in Hollywood. You got to get both of those.
Right? And certainly and so you did.
Off we go. But ultimately, what I would say to you, when you say which one is more important, I will answer it my way. From the very beginning, I have always understood I work for the audience. Mm. And what they say is what goes. And the one thing that I have always sought out is feedback from our customers. By the way, what did we talk about? Roger Rabbit, that preview that day in that theater is the worst one I've ever been to, ever. Okay. I care about the audience. And right now, what I care most about is, are they entertained? That literally is the thing. And the thing I'm most excited about right now is, for the first time after 3 years, I'm actually getting to hear from our customers. They're talking to us in amazing detail every moment of every day. There's a dashboard sitting in front. And as we're sitting here talking, I can look at this dashboard and see, oh my goodness, more than 50% of the time, people are turning their phones. And here's not a big surprise, but people watching Daily Essentials tend to watch them mostly in vertical. And the people that are watching the movies are mostly watching them in horizontal.
Yeah, you're getting a taste of that sweet, sweet Netflix data with a little extra for your verticals and horizontals. You know, I feel like we could do this for a while. But if this doesn't work out, Quibi, somehow, you know, we could do the Kim and Jeffrey show, or maybe it has to be the Jeffrey and Kim show. Just talk about years of crazy stories that we both went through together and separately in this community.
Well, we can do both. Quibi can be a success and we can do that.
Let's do
that. They are not mutually exclusive. Here's what you can do, Kim, is you can say, when Quibi is a success, you'll have a little bit more time and we can do this with a little more regularity.
Yes, I will do that. All right, I'm going to do this. Jeffrey Katzenberg is the, you want to be founder or co-founder with Meg Whitman?
I want to be anything that makes you, your audience, my customers, my partner, Meg Whitman, happy. I don't care. Call me dog catcher.
Jeffrey Katzenberg is apparently everything but a dog catcher. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, for joining us.
Happy to do it. Thank you. And everybody, keep your health and keep safe. And there is a better day coming.
Before you run off, KCRW's Power in Numbers membership drive is coming to a close. If you have the means right now, please support KCRW, a public resource for all. KCRW member benefits include exclusive chats with our hosts and DJs, perks at KCRW events, limited edition merchandise, discounts at local shops, and more. To make a donation, go to kcrw.com/give. If you like the show, please do it, and we appreciate your support. And that's the business. Caitlin Parker and Kevin Tidmarsh produced and edited today's program. Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream the business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on the business.